Good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining us on today's call on the Homeless Veteran Reintegration Program solicitation for grant applications. My name is Bailey Crone, and I'm going to be joined by Carrie Simpson. We're with the Technical Assistance Center at the National Coalition for Homeless Veterans. We're a technical assistance provider for the Department of Labor's Veterans Employment and Training Services HVRP program. This call is for organizations and partners that are considering applying for HVRP funds during this program year, and for organizations that would like to know more about the HVRP program and this application process. All of the information that we're going to go over today, excluding the resources and the contact information on the last two slides, can actually be found in the solicitation for grant applications. I'm going to refer to it from now on as the SGA. Wherever possible, I've noted the page numbers for the presented information, but if you have questions about the source, please feel free to contact me, and I can make sure that you have the right page numbers. After today's presentation, I'm going to do my best, and Carrie will also, to answer your questions based on what's published on HVRP in the SGA. But additional questions outside of what's described will be gathered and submitted to DOL Vets for further clarification. These answers and additional pieces of information will be published on the NCHV website on the same page as the teleconference information, and I'm going to guide you to that in just a minute to make sure everyone has the right presentation. Now, because of the large number of participants on today's call, I'm going to ask that if you have a program-specific question that relates in particular to your program activities or your application, please feel free to send me an email on that, and we can set up some time to talk on a one-on-one basis about your program. Let's try and keep today's questions on a more general level so they can be applicable to more organizations. But don't hesitate to contact me if you do want to talk about your program in particular. My email address is listed on the last slide of today's presentation, but if you have a pen handy, it's bcrone, B-C-R-O-N-E, at nchv.org. Again, that's bcrone, B-C-R-O-N-E, at nchv.org. If we don't have time to get to your question today, or if you have another question after the presentation, you can also send those over to me, and I'll be sure to include any relevant questions in our Q&A fact sheet, which should be up online in the same location as the conference call materials within the next day or so. Now, I want to go ahead and guide everyone to where the presentation is listed on the website. You did receive a reminder email earlier today that had a link in it to where the presentation materials are located. So go ahead and click on that link if you received it. For everyone else, if you don't have that handy, just go to the NCHV website. It's www.nchv.org. When you go there, you will see a gray box with a red outline located on the right-hand side of your screen that says NCHV Conference Calls. You're going to want to click on that. This brings you to a page that says teleconference schedule. NCHV announces two calls on Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program, SGA. Now, because this call is the second new applicant call, please scroll down to number one, HVRP Program and Application, New Applicants. You want to click on the presentation that says April 10th. This April 10th call, download the presentation here. I'll give everyone another minute to pull that up. If you have any problems accessing the presentation, also just shoot me an email at bcrone@nchv.org, and I'll make sure that you get sent the link to that. Thanks. Okay, so we should all have the presentation up. It should say Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program, Program and Application, New Applicants, April 10th, 2012. Go ahead and go to slide two, the agenda. We're going to spend about 40 to 45 minutes going over this agenda here, and after the presentation, we'll open it up to Q&A. Once again, the material presented here is from the SGA itself. I'm going to answer questions related to the SGA, but there might be certain points of clarification that I won't have answers to. Feel free to still ask all of the questions that you have, and if I don't have answers, I'll make sure that we get back to you and everyone else on the call with further clarification information. And again, if we don't get to your question, feel free to email that to me, and I'll make sure you get a response. The audio of today's call will also be available on the website where the presentation was located within the next few days. At that, I'm going to turn over the call to Carrie. She's going to talk for a bit about the HVRP background and the program information starting on slide 3. Carrie?
Okay, great. Let's first go over some background information about HVRP, beginning on slide 4. On this slide, you will see some basic information about the HVRP program. You will notice that HVRP is the only federal program that focuses exclusively on the employment of veterans who are homeless. And also to note, on October 5, 2011, President Obama signed the Veterans Healthcare Facilities Capital Improvement Act, which reauthorized HVRP through fiscal year 2012. On slide 5, you will see the two main objectives of HVRP. The first is to provide services to assist in reintegrating homeless veterans into meaningful employment within the labor force, as well as to stimulate the development of effective service delivery systems that will address the complex problems facing homeless veterans. Your program must have this two-pronged approach of expeditiously reintegrating homeless veterans into meaningful employment through the provisions of employment and supportive services, and of coordinating the service delivery system to address the barriers to employment faced by veterans in your region and in the nation. There is no specific set service model for successful HVRP programs, but today we will talk about some of the key components of programs and of your application that are necessary per this SGA. On slide 6, you will see the three-pronged goals and strategies for applicants. Successful applicants will demonstrate the ability to design, develop, and execute programs to assist eligible veterans by promoting, preparing, and improving participants to create successful training, employment, and retention outcomes. These set of three principles are from the SGA and truly capture the important employment and measured results focus of this program. On slide 7, you'll see the scope of program design, including services that your program may offer. Using the strategies from the slide before, you and your partner should provide a variety of employment-focused services, and they're listed there. HVRP grantees should also be aware of the service needs of female veterans and veterans with families, and the community-level resources that exist to supplement the efforts of HVRP services to support employment outcomes. In addition to focusing on service delivery and being attentive to presenting client needs, applicants must clearly showcase their capacity both on a staff and organizational level, including important community linkages. On slide 8, you will see the breakdown of funding levels and categories. The actual distribution of grants will be up to the grant officer and will be dependent on the strength and merit of the applications. So the distribution of non-urban to urban grants will be announced after selections are made. Note that you do not want to exceed the funding levels listed here, or you will be deemed unresponsive. There is $15 million total in funding to award, with urban grantees being awarded up to $300,000 and non-urban grantees up to $200,000. The distinction between urban and non-urban status is critical and must be clearly identified in your application. To decide which category your program is in, you will want to look at Appendix G, which comes from the metropolitan statistical areas of the 75 largest U.S. cities. Please double-check that you are using the population data listed here and in the SGA documents linked at the end of this presentation. The original publication did not have the correct attachment, but this does. So if you downloaded the SGA as soon as it was posted, you will want to go back and re-download for these additional for this additional information. I also want to go back and point out that to please be aware that the Department of Labor can negotiate the final award amounts. And acceptance of the initial acceptance does not constitute final approval, and the Department of Labor can enter into negotiations about the final budget, program component, or administrative system in place. On slide 9, we'll go over applicant eligibility. Here we have listed the agencies and organizations that are eligible for HVRP. This includes state and local workforce investment boards under sections 111 and 117 of the Workforce Investment Act. It is also important to note that a state agency may propose in its application to serve one or more of the jurisdictions located in its state. However, this does not preclude a city or county agency from submitting an application to serve its own jurisdiction. Nonprofit organizations, including community-based and faith-based organizations, are eligible. And these nonprofit entities need to submit an IRS statement indicating their 501c3 status. Additionally, faith-based entities that make hiring decisions based on religious beliefs may still be eligible under Title I of the Workforce Investment Act. If you are awarded, you will be provided with additional information about obtaining this exception at that time. Not eligible for HVRP funding are 501c4 entities. 501c3 is, but not 501c4. And all applicants should have a familiarity with the area and the population to be served, and the ability to administer an effective and timely program. Let's move on to slide 10, participant eligibility and important definitions. First, we have the definition of veteran. We have repeatedly been asked about discharge status. You are not prevented from working with veterans with a dishonorable discharge as an organization if you receive HVRP funds. However, with dishonorable discharge, you are not allowed to use HVRP funds to assist them. They cannot be enrolled in the HVRP program. But if you receive funding from additional grants or resources, you can assist those veterans. Moving on to slide 11, the definition of homeless. To help meet the Interagency Council on Homelessness and the VA's goals to end homelessness, the Department of Labor Veterans Employment and Training Service has adopted for HVRP the expanded definition of homelessness as outlined in the HEARTH Act. On this slide, I think it's important to point out bullet 5, which is an individual or family who will imminently lose their housing, can identify no subsequent residence, and which lacks the resources or support networks needed to obtain other permanent housing. Evidence that an individual or family will imminently lose their housing includes a court order resulting from eviction action that notifies the individual or family that they must leave within 14 days, having current primary residence, nighttime residence, that is a room in a hotel or motel, but lacking the resources necessary to reside there for more than 14 days. Credible evidence can also include a oral statement from an individual or family as long as it is deemed credible, indicating that the owner or renter of the housing will not allow the individual or family to stay for more than 14 days. And then finally, as far as definitions, chronically homeless. Chronically homeless veterans are eligible to participate in HVRP. Chronically homeless veterans are unaccompanied homeless individuals with a disabling condition who have been continually homeless for a year or more, or who have at least 4 episodes of homelessness in the past 3 years. It's important to note that while it is encouraged that your program be able to address the needs specific to chronically homeless veterans, in this SGA, no additional points are awarded for specifically working with chronically homeless veterans. And now we're on slide 13.
All right. I'm going to talk a bit about the 2 definitions that you'll see on slide 13 about transparency. Let's take a look at that section. Now, I think it's important to note that organizations that are receiving funding under the HVRP grant will have their abstract, their executive summary, and their redacted technical proposal published following the grant award. This is a really great opportunity to publicize your activities to the public, but the Department of Labor is sensitive to the reality that some information that would be contained in these 2 pieces of your application could cause personal or organizational challenges if they're published. As a result, if you're awarded funds, your abstract will be published as submitted, no changes allowed, while you can submit a redacted version of your tech proposal. You want to be sure that your redacted version is submitted within 2 weeks of your original submission will be published with only the personally identifiable information removed. That's important to note the distinction between the 2 definitions here. If you don't submit a redacted technical proposal upon award within 2 weeks, Department of Labor will remove the personally identifiable information, but the proprietary or business confidential information will remain in the technical proposal, so be sure that you are aware of that requirement. You will get additional details on where and to whom you need to submit the redacted tech proposal upon award, but just that's something good to keep in mind. You can maybe even do a draft of that after you submit your full application. And you also want to note that you don't want to go overboard with the redactions. This is really just to remove any sensitive information that might cause personal or organizational harm or hurt your competitiveness. You don't want to be removing full sections of your proposal. Now let's go ahead and talk about the HVRP application. So we're moving on to slide 14. You can just go ahead and go on to slide 15, page limits and formatting. I think the page limits pretty self-explanatory. You want to make sure that you don't go over these page limits because anything above those limits won't be read. It's also good to keep in mind that there are quite a few documents that are necessary for your application that don't fall within the 15 or the 50-page total, and we actually will have a list of documents that fall outside of those limitations at the end of this presentation. You want to be sure to include page numbers with your tech proposal starting with page 1. And it's just common practice. This isn't in the SGA, but I think it's something good to note. You want to make sure that your section headings match the section headings in the SGA. It makes it easier for grant reviewers. Be sure to follow these formatting pieces, as you have to follow them immediately. They have to be in those formats. If you're submitting through grants.gov, you want to use one of those 3 formats listed on slide 15. Anything else that you submit, for example, an Excel document, the reviewers will try to open the attachment if it doesn't work easily and if it's not easy to use. That part of your application will not be graded or reviewed, and this could potentially make you non-responsive. So be sure to use one of those 3 formats. Talk about the award announcement and performance period on slide 16. Now, the award announcements are expected in mid-June, depending on the time that's necessary to grade all of the applicants or applications. If you're not familiar with the process and looked at last year's notification and are concerned with the late award date, please know that last year's SGA was put out quite a bit later than this year's, so the actual awards were later. They were actually after the beginning of the program year. But last year was kind of an anomaly, so we're expecting with award announcements in mid-June, you should be able to start your program activities July 1st, so day one. And you are expected to start your program activities on the first day of the performance period, which would be July 1st. So that's important to keep in mind when you are developing and writing out your staffing plan. Now let's talk a bit about some of the additional logistics and some of the funding restrictions. The slide just contains a few other pieces of information you need to know about funding restrictions. I think an important piece to note here is that you can't co-enroll participants in both HVRP and VWIP. There is a distinction made in this SGA between those two programs where co-enrollment is tied to the organization, not the individual. So, for example, if you are an organization that has both a VWIP and an HVRP grant, you can't enroll a participant in both programs. But if you have an HVRP grant and another partner in the community has a VWIP grant, you can enroll the participant in your program, and he or she can also be enrolled in the VWIP. So once again, the co-enrollment is dependent on the organization, not on the individual. I want to point out here the funding restrictions that are listed because they are pretty important as you're developing your budget. Your admin costs should not exceed 20% of the total award, your total requested amount. There are no pre-award costs that are going to be eligible for this, so all costs have to be incurred following the beginning of the program year. Also, be aware of the salary and bonus limitations that are outlined on page 36. I'm not going to go over those, but definitely be sure to read those to make sure you're within those guidelines in your budget. And a last important piece on this slide, grant funds cannot be used for participant wages or as wage replacements, so in the form of a stipend, for example. That's very important to note as you're putting together your budget. If you look at slide 18, there's some more information about the submission process. The due date is April 30th, which we actually took from grants.gov. It's not listed in the SGA. The SGA says 30 days from publication, but grants.gov says April 30th. It's 4 p.m. Eastern. Last year it was 5 p.m. Eastern, so 4 p.m. Eastern this year, April 30th. We see the acceptable and the unacceptable methods of submission. Make sure you are aware of that. I'm going to talk in a little bit more detail about the grants.gov submission. Also to note, it's your responsibility as an applicant to check back on the Department of Labor's HVRP SGA site as well as on grants.gov on a regular basis to notice any changes that are published on either of those sites. If there are changes that affect your application, it is your responsibility to be aware of what those changes might be. I want to talk a bit about grants.gov just to give you an overview, but definitely take a look at pages 30 through 33 because they do go into additional detail on this process, registering and submitting through grants.gov. The process can take up to 4 weeks, but the downloadable checklist is really helpful, and it's right on that first page to help you sign up for and submit your application through grants.gov. But it's important to know that it does take a little while to get that up and running, so make sure you start that early. If you haven't done so already and you're planning on submitting through grants.gov, I would get on that as soon as possible. Now, I will note that there's a clarification in this SGA about the emails that you receive and the timestamp. As long as your application is submitted, and you receive a timestamp on that application for it being submitted before 4 p.m. on April 30th, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on April 30th, you get the timestamp, your application is in on time. Immediately after submission, you'll receive an automatic response that just confirms receipt of your application and gives you a tracking number. Within the next few days, you receive a second email. The second email either confirms the validation of your application or rejects your application due to errors. Now, if you submit your application at the last minute, you get the first email, and then a few days later, after the application is already due, your application is rejected. At that point, you can't go back in and make any changes and resubmit. So if you're submitting via grants.gov, try and do so a few days early so that you can not only get the first email, but also the second email validating your application. You don't want to go through all of the effort of putting together the application and then have it rejected due to errors. If you are mailing your application, know that you want to have the original with the copy signed in blue ink, and then, I'm sorry, you want to have your original signed in blue ink, and then you have two additional copies made of your original. Your two copies should be quote-unquote copy-ready, so you don't want any tabs or staples or anything that's going to make those more difficult to copy. That helps the grant reviewers as they are making copies of your application to distribute to the grant reviewers. Now, your original, the one that has the signed in blue ink components, that can have the other tabs and staples and divisions in the application, but your copy should be quote-unquote copy-ready. If for some reason you submit multiple applications, either multiple ones on grants.gov or both in paper and via grants.gov, send a hard copy letter with your paper application saying which application is supposed to be reviewed. If you submit more than one online, the last qualifying submission that's received will be the one that is accepted. So that's a good thing to know. Try, if you can, to only submit one application. Let's move on to the application structure and the point system. So for this application, you can earn up to 100 points. There are three sections, the cost proposal, the technical proposal, and then the attachments to the technical proposal. And we're going to go over these in a little bit more detail. Let's talk about part one, the cost proposal. Now, be sure to read this section carefully to make sure you don't forget to include a piece of the information that's necessary. The cost proposal, while not included in the grading for the technical proposal, is necessary for your application, and missing pieces can lead to a non-responsive application. So make sure the SF-424 is signed by the appropriate official in your organization. And another note, you want to make sure that all of the numbers that are listed on each form match one another. Double, triple, quadruple check that to make sure that they're all the same. Otherwise, the number that's on the SF-424 will be the final number accepted. The bottom there, you need to make sure that you register and remain active in the Federal Central Contractor Registry, the CCR. You need to register for that before you submit your application. There's more really detailed information about that on page 23 of the SGA, so I'm not going to go over that here. But just know that you do need to register in the Federal Central Contractor Registry before submitting your application. Now, a component of the cost proposal is the budget narrative. If you go to slide 22, let's talk about that really quickly. It has pretty self-explanatory guidelines about what you need to include in your budget narrative. It's just really a detailed breakdown of each item that's in your budget. A few pieces to note with that is your fringe benefits. If they're over 35% of wages and salaries, you need to be sure to explain that. And you can't have travel expenses that exceed 5% of the funds you're requesting. You need to be sure to budget for two representatives from your organization to attend a post-award conference using Washington, D.C. for your planning purposes, and I believe it's 4 days total that you per individual that you're planning for. Equipment purchases is another important point of your budget that you need to make sure is within the guidelines given in the SGA. You can't have items that cost more than $5,000 per unit without specific approval by the GOTR, and that information needs to be outlined and explained here. Oh, and again, the GOTR is the Grant Officer Technical Representative. That's the person who oversees your grant. I'm going to skip part two for a moment because we'll go back to that and just go to part three, the attachments to your technical proposal. Can't emphasize enough, keep all of these documents together. When you submit, you only submit one set of documents. Don't send other pieces later because they're never going to get connected to your application. They receive hundreds of applications, so if you send a capacity statement later, it probably won't ever get connected to your proposal. So be sure that you keep everything together at all times. Specific attachments are mentioned throughout the SGA, and I've mentioned or will mention quite a few of them, But here are the specific attachments that you have to have in this section or you'll be deemed non-responsive. Another one that wasn't, we do have it listed here, it's the audit. Okay, wanted to make sure that was on there. And another piece that you need is the IRS statement showing your 501c3 status. Just to talk a bit about the abstract and the executive summary, you can conceptualize that as having four main components, one of which is background and the other three are process-oriented. So the background would be discussion of your geographic area, including your congressional district and the type of grant, so whether you are applying as an urban or a non-urban grantee. The three process-oriented pieces are your strategy, your timeline, and your proposed outcomes. You need to make sure to include all four of those components in your executive summary. Keep in mind for your audit that it should have occurred within the last 18 months. And your organizational and staff capacity support documents, that includes an organizational chart, resumes, and staff capacity statements. Let's move on to the technical proposal starting on slide 25. You want to be sure that you're addressing all of the evaluation criteria, but whenever possible, also outlining your measures for success. Once again, some of the components of the technical proposal don't count toward the 15-page limit. These are labeled in the SGA, but we also have a list of them at the end of today's presentation that I would suggest looking over. Okay, let's talk a bit about the need for the project. Slide 26, this is worth 10 points in your application. You want to have some very specific detailed data included in this section. You want to be able to outline the concentration of homeless individuals and homeless veterans in the proposed project service area. A lot of this information can be found in the most recent challenge report or the supplement to the AHAR, and possibly from your recent COC point in time count, your continuum of care point in time count, if that data is available to you. You'll find information about poverty and unemployment rates from the census data. You probably want to use the 2000 census. I don't believe the 2010 data is out yet. You want to know what gaps exist in local services that exacerbate employment barriers of homeless veterans. The barriers to employment in your area will include direct employment barriers and also gaps in critical supportive services that are tied to successful employment outcomes. You should also know about the employment opportunities that are available in your area, including the local job market and potential opportunities for your veterans. This will be, you can do this through being involved with your career one-stop and even with a lot of the mega hiring fairs that are occurring in coordination with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, so be involved with your local chamber as well. Let's talk about the bulk of this, which is the overall approach and strategy on slide 27, which is worth 45 points. For your overall approach, you can conceptualize this in four dimensions with pervasive supportive services throughout the whole process. You'll need a participant flowchart to show these services in their sequence, and the goal here is really to showcase the connection between the supportive services and the employment services and the job readiness. I'm going to go through the dimensions outlined there, the four dimensions. So keep in mind, as you're developing this, four dimensions, supportive services throughout, depending on the need of the individual. Let's talk a bit about outreach. As an HVRP grantee, you have to provide orientation workshops and project awareness workshops to service providers in your community. In addition to reaching out to homeless veterans themselves, applicants should explain how their program will connect to entities that can introduce potentially eligible homeless veterans to your HVRP program. There are a lot of ways to engage in this type of outreach, from attending seminars to developing memorandums of understanding, MOUs with your partners, but it needs to happen. Applicants want to show how their outreach strategy helps to avoid service delivery duplication in the community. So when you're doing that outreach, you want to be able to showcase in your practice and in your application that you're connecting to partners to avoid duplication of resources. It might go without saying also, but successful outreach to homeless veterans often requires staff that have direct personal experience doing outreach, especially individuals that are formerly homeless veterans or who have experience working with homeless veterans. So that's important to keep in mind as you're developing your outreach strategy. The last piece on there is that all grantees should participate in stand down. You can't include stand down, cannot include stand down funding in your budget. That's a separate application. If you have questions about applying for stand down funds, I have some resources listed at the end of the presentation today. And we're also going to do trainings on developing stand down within the next couple of months here. For the visual learners, take a look at slide 29. This just outlines the way the outreach process can work. Your organization is engaged with both homeless veterans and your partners. There's a feedback loop on each one of those. But homeless veterans are also engaging with your partners who can then refer them up to you, your organization. I'm going to talk quickly about Dimension 2, Assessment and Intake. The goal here is to identify and address barriers to employment for participants to ensure long-term success. Each individual needs to be assessed to gauge job readiness level, their interests, needs, and their barriers to employment. Sometimes a homeless veteran might not be ready for enrollment in HVRP and might need to be referred to another treatment program first. You need to be able to outline what that process looks like. Now, there are five main steps that you need to fully answer Dimension 2. The first is to establish a process for assessing abilities, interests, needs, and barriers with a focus on testing whenever possible. You want to establish, as step two, a process for assessing which skills and services are needed to facilitate employment. Step three, applicants need to determine the participant willingness to enter employment after receiving services. This is a really important point that's new in this SGA. A lot of programs have struggled in the past with individuals who have come in for HVRP services or just come into a program, been enrolled in HVRP without expressing and committing to that willingness and that desire to actually enter and maintain employment. You want to be able to showcase to the reviewers that your program is not only asking but is making a concrete effort to assess whether individuals are actually willing to enter employment after they receive HVRP services. And this can also be useful in gaining that verbal or that written commitment from the individual participant to be more engaged in the program. Step four, applicants need to showcase their testing process to determine participant needs to obtain and retain gainful employment and where this process fits into the formal enrollment in HVRP. And then the last step there is the connection to VA benefits, either through VSOs in your community or through the VA directly. You need to be able to track progress on the claims. Going to slide three, Dimension 3, slide 31, Employment and Training Services. I'm not going to go into a ton of detail here because we have quite a few slides to get through, but I will talk about the IEP, the Individual Employment Plan, and how it's important to have not only the services that the individual needs here, but also your plan for updating the IEP as the individual progresses throughout their plan. That's really critical to have there. Another thing that I'll note for you on this slide, when you're talking about the jobs and the training, you want to make sure that the jobs you're describing are those that are locally in demand and also provide long-term career potential to participants in your program. So when you're talking about training opportunities that are local, you want to make sure that you include the length of the training, the curriculum, and how it's going to benefit the veterans in the program. So keep that in mind when you're discussing jobs and training. Also, note that HVRP is one program year with optional renewal years. So when you're talking about length of training curriculum, if you have a training program that's longer than a year, that's going to prevent you from having placements for those individuals in that first year. So you might want to work with the community colleges or the training provider to see if you can make a shorter, expedited training program that actually fits the model of HVRP. And I just want to note the distinction between basic services and training services. At least 80% of the individuals enrolled in your HVRP program need to participate in job skills training. Some training is useful, like life skills or money management, but these are basic services and don't actually count toward that 80% number. On slide 32, I just have listed the required employment services that you will need to provide. Those are listed in the SGA, so if you want more information, just take a look there. The last one, dimension four, your follow-up services. Now, successful applicants need to engage in pretty creative approaches for conducting their follow-up and retention services for 3 quarters after placement. Alumni networks have been really effective and offer a no-cost approach that can connect current participants to members. That last piece there, establishing a formal relationship to have access to state unemployment insurance data can help provide concrete support to your results. So if you already have that relationship, great. If not, that would be a great one to develop. Let's talk about the quality of linkages, which is slide 34, which is worth 15 points. I'll note here that grantees are expected to register as employment networks in the Ticket to Word program. Our partners at Maximus can help you with that process. We'll probably do some trainings in the next couple of months to help grantee organizations through HVRP register as employment networks through the Social Security Administration's Ticket to Work program. Successful applicants need to demonstrate their process for connecting program participants to necessary services that actually meet their needs. This is including but not limited to PTSD and traumatic brain injury assessments, sexual trauma counseling, and alcohol and drug rehabilitation. Especially in areas that have increasing numbers of homeless OIF and OEF veterans and female veterans, many of whom are experiencing debilitating effects of co-occurring and compounding disorders, access to treatment that matches their needs will be critical for long-term employment success. Now, to showcase these linkages, you want to create a network list showing who the provider is, the source of their funding for that specific programmatic activity, and the type of referral system you have with them, whether it's already established or it's one you're just proposing. And you want to focus on the quality and the extent of these linkages. Finally, you want to be able to showcase how your project fits into the national 5-year and local 10-year plans to prevent and end homelessness. On the quality of linkages section, there are a bunch of potential partners that we just have listed for you. If you have any questions about those, let us know. The one that I will note for you is the SSVF program, the Supportive Services for Veteran Families program through VA, because that program will be expanding. That's a great partner to have, especially for individuals who might potentially be eligible for both HVRP and SSVF, because you can't use HVRP funds for housing services. The SSVF partners might be really useful in helping some of your program participants get connected to needed housing. And I'll also emphasize the importance of the DVOPs and LEAVERs. These are Disabled Veteran Outreach Program Specialists and local veteran employment representatives. They're located usually at your career one-stops, and they can be extremely helpful in providing training and placement and retention assistance for your program. Go to slide 35, organizational capacity and experience. This is worth 20 points. So there are two pieces here, your staff experience and also the organization's experience and capacity. You can see page 50, they have a lot of details, page 50 in the SGA, a lot of details on what's required to showcase staff experience. I'm not going to talk about all of them here because they're on page 50 and they're pretty clearly organized. Some pieces that you'll want to include in your organizational chart are where your office locations are that are involved in this program. If you have multiple divisions, which divisions within the organization are involved, how your interaction of your partners works with the different divisions. When you're talking specifically about your staff experience, you want to focus on any staff members who are veterans or formerly homeless. And then you also want to be able to showcase the staff members that you have who have experience working with the homeless veteran population. Now, specifically for your organizational experience, I think most of the organizations we have on the phone are not previous grantees, but I'll talk a little bit about what you need to showcase for your past performance for previous and not previous grantees. It's going to look different depending on which one you are. For previous grantees, you need, at a minimum, a copy of your most recently completed fourth quarter technical performance report, the TPR, your technical performance narrative, the TPN, and your plan goals spreadsheet for the corresponding period. You must submit this data. If you are not a previous HVRP grantee, you need to submit your last 3 years of financial and programmatic reports as well as a summary narrative. Let's talk about the housing strategy on page 38. As I mentioned, no HVRP funds can be used for housing in any capacity, so that's something where you will definitely need to leverage your partnerships to make sure that you are connecting individuals enrolled in your program to housing opportunities that fit their needs. Now, you need to be able to differentiate between emergency, transitional, and permanent housing options, where permanent housing options can include affordable housing, Section 8 housing if necessary, or supportive housing through HUD-VASH, for example. In your program strategy, you need to be able to showcase how you're going to provide access to appropriate housing, so any one of those options listed, for at least the number of planned enrollees in your program. This has two components, both the resources and the process. So when you're talking about your resources, you need to be able to outline which participants, which collaborating organizations within your network can provide the housing that will meet the needs of the individuals in your program, as well as the process for referral and actually getting those veterans into those appropriate housing units. Again, no HVRP funds can be used for housing. It's also important to note the distinction made in the SGA between eligibility for HVRP and HUD-VASH vouchers. As long as a HUD-VASH voucher is not fully executed, the individual is still homeless and is therefore eligible for HVRP enrollment. But once that HUD-VASH voucher has been executed, the individual is no longer eligible for HVRP enrollment because he or she is no longer homeless. That means that if you have an individual who is potentially eligible for a HUD-VASH voucher and is also eligible for HVRP, they would need to be enrolled in HVRP first before that voucher is fully executed. And that's just about all I'm going to go over, and we're going to open it up to Q&A. If you take a look at page 39, these are components that are listed in the SGA that you must have but are not included in the 50-page proposal maximum. Note that your cost proposal does count toward your 50-page maximum. And then on slide 40, these are pieces that are specifically mentioned in the narrative of the SGA but are not included in the 15-page technical proposal maximum. Just a reminder on slide 41, include all requirements or risk losing points or being non-responsive. So follow the SGA as closely as possible. To help you answer the components of the SGA, we've provided a ton of resources. Most of these come from the SGA itself, but some of them we have just provided because we know they might be of use to you. So if you look at slides 41 and 42, that provides some useful resources. And two of which I had mentioned, information on becoming an employment network, I think is there. If not, I can send that to you. And stand down resources, if you are interested in learning more about that, we can get you connected to that data. The last slide, slide 44, this has information for Cassandra Mitchell, who is the grant officer over at Department of Labor. If you have questions about the program, you can contact her, as well as contacting us at the HVRP Technical Assistance Center at NCHV. Again, my name is Bailey Crone, and my email address is listed there, and Carrie and I are here to help you as much as we can, so feel free to ask us questions either when we open up the QA in just a minute here, or if you want to send us an email, that's fine too. So I guess we can go ahead and open it up to Q&A.
If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one, on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from Sheila McFerrin.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you for doing this wonderful PowerPoint presentation. I am with Still Serving Veterans, mm-hmm. and we are based in Huntsville, Alabama, though we are a national organization. Mm-hmm. And we applied for the SSVF grant and did a fabulous application the first time. We did not get it, so we resubmitted on the second round. Mm-hmm. And I noticed when I go through this presentation, it's very, very similar, and definitely I really endorse the partnership with SSVF. But do you have specific regions where the grantees will be selected, or is it just, and I know we're all based on points, but do you have a focus on, you know, north, south, east, and west, or is it specifically, because we are not an organization that serves the homeless, but we partner, so we're very, very strong in the mitigating homelessness through our workforce development and via our counseling, et cetera.
Okay. So, well, I'll answer a couple points in that. First, just to clarify, too, we don't do – so we're a nonprofit that works with the Department of Labor to provide technical assistance. We don't do the actual grant reviewing. That's a completely separate process that we're actually not involved in at all.
Okay.
So I can't speak too much to the grant review process. What I can say is that the applications are they are reviewed on a point system first, and that's the first priority. Now, whether there's another round of edits or review that goes through after that, after the initial points review process to see what the geographic distribution is, I can't speak to that, but I know that the first priority is actually to go through an award based on the strength of the applications, with the assumption that there will be some that are urban and some that are non-urban. The other piece is there are some really important distinctions between HVRP and the SSVF program, especially as it concerns eligibility for the program. And HVRP is very much so employment-focused. It's employment as a conduit to independent living. So there's a little bit of a philosophical difference between the two programs. They complement one another very well, but they're definitely very distinct because HVRP focuses specifically on homeless individuals, but that includes individuals that may or may not be eligible for SSVF. I would just be really aware of those differences between the program before applying because there are some pretty important distinctions there. Hopefully that helps a little bit. But I wish you the best of luck with SSVS, too. That's a very exciting program, and you know we're looking forward to see how the two programs interact in locations where organizations either have both or partnering organizations have one of each. We don't have a ton of time, so we'll take one, maybe two more questions. I'm sorry if we don't get to your question, but we can you can always email me, and we'll make sure we get that information out.
Your next question comes from Vicki Williams.
Hi. I wanted to know, I am a formerly homeless vet here in D.C., mm-hmm. and I used to work for the Department of Labor. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to know, I'm in the process of the 501c3, but I have another formerly homeless vet, and we're all advocates here in D.C. area. Mm-hmm. Can both of us be on the 501c3? And if not, do one have to just be on it and we're on the board with them? Because right now we're currently working with most of all the homeless veterans here. Mm-hmm. But I also was a VDOT counselor.
I'm not an expert on becoming a 501c3, so I can't really help you with that piece. You're probably going to have to talk to the folks that you're working with on developing that piece. You do have to have your 501c3 status in order to apply for HVRP. But as for the actual getting that set in place, I can't really speak to that. I don't work in that spot.
Sorry, okay, do we submit resumes?
I'm sorry?
Will we submit resumes with the application as well?
Yes, you can in the staff capacity statements, yes. You can include resumes in there, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Okay. This is very excellent. Thank you.
No problem. I think we can do one more.
Your next question comes from Rosa Turner.
Hi, this is Rosa Turner with EUP Management Group.
Hi, Rosa.
Hi, I just want to clarify, because I'm going to be assisting someone, an organization applying for this, but to clarify, the eligibility is strictly for municipalities, state agencies, and also nonprofit organizations, but can a for-profit organization serve as one of those partners or subcontractor to that nonprofit organization? Or one
for-profit
of those
or commercial entities are eligible.
They are eligible mm-hmm. to apply separately?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you for clarifying that
for me.
Okay.
All right. And I think that's about all the time we have. Sorry we didn't have more time for Q&A, but there's a lot of material to go over. My email address is, again, at the end of the presentation. It's bcrone@nchv.org. If you have questions, please send those over to me, and let me know if you want to keep the conversation just between you and me in the email, or if I can use that question in the Q&A fact sheet that we will include up on the website for everyone to access. So thanks for your time today, and best of luck with your applications. Thanks.
This concludes today's conference. You may now disconnect.